Oh, and then there's the operatic section. You're gonna love it.
The operatic section.
I know, it sounds crazy,
I love it, Fred.
But I don't know, it could be a flop.
And we're back! Welcome once again to another episode of Mike, and Oscar. And if I don't sound like Mike 1 and I instead sound like Jaws from the James Bond movies, it's because I'm a little under the weather. My throat's been bothering me the last couple days. But we're doing a category review. That's not going to stop. The Oscars don't stop for my illness, even though it's
you're a gamer.
Inconsiderate of them. I'd like them to at least give me a call, let me have the option of postponing the show. But that's fine. I'm not bitter. I'm Mike 1. This is co-host Also Mike, dealing with my rambling.
Also Mike. Mike, I'm proud of you. You're stepping up to the show must go on.
This is the Jordan flu game for me.
The
yeah.
Jordan flu game. Yeah, I wish I was wearing a mask now. I was offered a mask.
I gave one to you.
And I did not wear it, but no. That's all right. I'm hoping my immune system is ready to work overtime and we don't get the opposite of this on the next three pods where I'm sick and you're not. And
yeah, you can't get sick. I'm sorry. I'm not allowed. That. But speaking of masks and prosthetics and all types of things, we're talking about the best lead actor race today. That's going to be the category review we have for you in store this episode. If you've not been with us before for a category review, what we do is we take any given Oscars category, now that the nominations have been announced with the Oscars show just a couple weeks away now, just more than 2 weeks away at this point that you'll be listening to this and we're recording this. We go through every nominee in the category one by one and we take each one individually and tell you why they will win and tell you also why they will not win come Oscars Sunday. So no matter how far a long shot or how sure a bet, we're going to go through and poke holes and we're going to give props and hope to everybody all up and down the card. But first, we usually start these with some snub-a-dub-dubs, Mike.
Snub-a-dub-dubs. Yes. This is a crazy race. It was crazy in the precursors with who was going to get that final spot. And John David Washington from Black Klansman, he got the SAG.
He should be in here.
It looked like he was going to get in here. He got the Critics' Choice nod, and he is not here. Michael, we're kind of upset about that when you consider one of these nominees, at least.
Do you think it's a case of, like, people just didn't know he wasn't that character on screen? Because he didn't really have a whole lot of exposure and wasn't all that well-known before this movie. But, like, True. If you go watch interviews of him, he is the polar opposite. Comes off as the polar opposite of that character that he played in Black Klansman.
Christian Bale's magician in The Prestige. The act is the rest of your life.
Right.
If the act is the rest of your life, or if the setup to the trick is the rest of your life, then John David Washington pulled a hell of a trick on us.
Sure. He belongs here.
Yeah, I think so too.
Ethan Hawke, for his performance, speaking of people that probably have a claim to be in here, he won just every Critics Circle Award for Best Actor and doesn't find his name on this list of five.
The critics loved him. The screenplay broke through with Paul Schrader. I wonder if that happened because it won the Critics' Choice Award. And basically, the Academy was like, all right, we probably have to vote for this now. Ethan Hawke didn't show up to the Critics' Choice Awards. I wonder if he knew something. It was something that we, back when we reviewed that award show, were intrigued about. I don't know what happened there. I thought he would have had the inside straight to win that award, and he did not.
Yeah, those are the two, and we could even go further for us personally. I know we feel the same about the next guy coming up, but there's two or three names on this that surely belong in this category over some others, or at least one.
Ryan Gosling from First Man, we're a big fan of that performance.
Great performance.
You know, he does the subtle thing. It's the stoic performance, and then he also has some big emotional scenes. He's got scenes where he's, you know, physically doing a lot in terms of the physicality of that performance out there in space, which is, I'm convinced they actually went to film this.
A lot of emotional restraint in that performance. A lot of moodiness that he had to emit through not showing a whole lot.
Cracks to the veneer kind of thing. I was very impressed with him.
Steve Carell from Beautiful Boy also could have had a claim here. It's another guy that was a decent performance, and I think Beautiful Boy as a whole getting overlooked kind of is wrong. It should get some sort of recognition at the Oscars.
It should have. The Timothy Chalamet snub was probably the most egregious thing that we've seen this award season, or one of. Steve Carell was also very good in that movie. I wonder if some of the dialogue hurt him because he didn't get the best script to work with there. Neil, I wonder if the movie being a 60%er hurt him.
Very polarizing, very tough topic, yeah.
Tough to watch. And First Reformed, Beautiful Boy, there's screeners that, you know, the Academy may not have put into their laptops at the end of of the day or whatever they're watching it on.
Speaking of people not watching things,
Stephon James, If Beale Street Could Talk. I loved him in that. I thought he was phenomenal. Talk about restraint when you need it. Talk about range when he needs to do that as well. I'm a huge fan. I just threw out a GIF today on Follow Friday with Stephon James, you know, yelling up to the stars. I'm a huge fan of that film. I'm upset that it didn't get an ensemble nod. I'm upset that it didn't get more this year at the Academy. I thought for sure people were going to give Barry Jenkins more credit
going
in.
Absolutely shocking that Barry Jenkins was kind of left on the outside looking in at these Oscars. Lucas Hedges had a couple performances this year. We're going to focus on Boy Erased, though, for the lead actor category.
Yeah, I think he's crushing it right now in his young career. He has just been one role after the next, has been critically acclaimed. This one was very, very good. I wonder if his character had a few more dimensions to it. We would be talking about him today and the rest of this. Ben Foster, Mike, Leave No Trace. We were big fans of the movie. We reviewed it in the OSP. I think I was a bigger fan of the performance than you, but we both have a lot of respect for it.
Yeah, for sure. I think Ben Foster, Lucas Hedges, there's this like this, I know Ben Foster's been around for kind of a while, more so than Hedges, it seems like anyway, but going back to the Alpha Dog days, the critically acclaimed and much awarded, rewarded, and passionately, I love that movie.
Yeah.
I think Ben Foster, Lucas Hedges, there's like this, they're the next wave of Hollywood leading men, and I think it's only a matter of time.
They're knocking
like
on the door, yeah. Right?
And Lakeith Stanfield, who's next on the list from Sorry to Bother You, could throw him in there too. That was a great performance. We both enjoyed
that. We love that. And he's the straight man in like the big satire, and I thought he had a ton of emotional
absolutely.
Range.
Absolutely.
He's the surrogate for the audience.
Batshit crazy script. That love. He had to play straight lace through.
Yeah, say what you want about the script, because some people didn't like it. It was a bit jarring, I would say.
Lighten up!
Yeah, we did. We were rooting for it. But at the same time, I can understand why certain things in that movie could take one by surprise. But I loved his performance, and I think it's inarguable how good it was.
Tessa Thompson could be in there too, absolutely. Chadwick Boseman for Black Panther. There was also a surge to get him nominated, especially when that movie first came out. But again, maybe a curse of being released too early to get into the acting race, but at least the movie got a Best Picture nom.
It's strange that a protagonist can be sneaky good in his own movie, because the whole ensemble is so awesome.
Yes.
And that was a well-deserved win at the SAGs. I think they should have been nominated more throughout the card there, but he's sneaky good in this movie.
Yeah,
like, oh my God, the protagonist is worthy of being, you know, the main guy, and he's awesome. Paul Giamatti in Private Life. That was a performance that took me by surprise. That was a movie that took me by surprise on Netflix. Go watch it. We would have loved to have done an OSP. It was on our schedule for the longest time.
Yeah.
But we were reading the tea leaves. It didn't feel like it was going to get nominated, so we did avoid it, but we really liked that movie.
Giamatti might be a name coming up at some point in the next couple of years where it's like, why doesn't that guy have an Oscar?
True.
See him breaking into the lifetime achievement conversation at some point.
He's getting in that conversation.
Yeah.
I mean, everything he does is strong. I mean,
yeah,
look, even the Billions
phenomenal.
Stuff.
Yeah.
I haven't watched all of Billions. I've caught an episode here or there. He's very good in it.
Brady Jandrew from The Rider, another young actor that kind of staked his claim. That movie obviously winning Best Picture at the Gotham Film Awards this year. Great job by him.
Horse trainer turned thespian.
Goddamn
overnight.
Horse movies. Yeah.
I can't believe he was this good.
No, he was phenomenal. That whole movie. And it's another ensemble that really doesn't seem like there was a lot of actors in that, and they really pulled it off.
I can't believe he hit some of the emotions in that performance, and he was as good as he was, because he is not an actor, and he pulled it off. Clint Eastwood in The Mule.
Bang, 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 bang.
I didn't love the trailer. I didn't love the movie. And he's undeniably good in it, as he is usually. So, I mean, this man has been doing it for, you know, 70 years, 60 years.
Yeah, that's about right. Maybe 102, yeah.
Oh, I might be. Oh, it might be 75 years. Is he 90 something or 80 something?
He's got. He might be 102. I wasn't lying. I think that was a guess. A couple other reaches here probably wouldn't have never been considered, but just because they were in weird movies or blockbuster movies doesn't mean they shouldn't be. Tom Cruise in Mission Impossible Fallout. He's a leading
what
man.
What more does
he
have to do? He jumps out of a plane for how many takes? 100 something takes. He's climbing free solo these cliffs. I mean, he's doing all of his own stunts. And he has some dramatic chops, obviously.
He has to. You got to sell those. See, I mean, the whole reason the mission is impossible is due to the emotional stakes.
Yes.
You know?
There's a lot of dream sequences in that movie. There's a lot of POV stuff where he is wrestling with a ton of thematic weight. And no, of course, the Academy's against him. The SAGs are against him. It might have to do with his religious beliefs and with the bullying that religion places upon people, especially especially out there on the West Coast. I understand that. At the end of the day, we get it, but just comparing one to one, that's a hell of a performance. Mike, Nicolas Cage in Mandy, he was so good. I didn't love that movie, and everybody hates me because I didn't love it.
Right.
Even though I have respect for that movie, it has some great moments. It has a hell of a third act, really, act two and act three. And Nicolas Cage is just so vintage crazy in this. He's so B-movie awesome.
He's nestling in comfortably to be his latter years of being casted as just an absolute psychopath.
But he also has one of the best dramatic scenes of the year by himself.
He's got chops. I mean, lest we forget, the guy has won an Oscar and has been nominated other times as well.
Scene in the bathroom, in his tidy whities. I can't believe he does what he does. Michael.
John Cho from Searching, that was one of those Screen Life movies. We were really kind of blown away by this. Seemed to get lost in the shuffle this year, but another movie that really we enjoyed and I thought had all kinds of depth to it.
And he has to carry a lot.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And he has to react to nothing. He has to react to a screen that's supposed to show him things that we don't really necessarily think as an actor he's getting a lot to act off of. He's basically Johnny Depp in Rango or something, where it's just him in a room and he's got to do stuff. And I'm a big fan of John Cho. It's a great sign for things to come from him. Mike, Joaquin Phoenix, You Were Never Really Here.
This was something you had a problem with. You didn't buy the hype, but a lot of people had him up there for a long time.
And last year, he was up there for a long time. It was one of those movies that, like this year, we're seeing everybody knows and On the Basis of Sex get pushed. A lot of those quote-unquote Oscar movies that were on, award circuit and gold derby all year, especially early in the season. And Joaquin Phoenix was up there. He was in top fives for the first 6 months.
Yeah.
And then once, it seemed like that release was going to get pushed, he kind of fell off the map. He's very good in this movie, however you think of the script. I didn't love the script. That might be a me problem. I expected a totally different movie. We always talk about expectations ruling the day here.
Sure.
And I did not expect the movie I got. However, Joaquin Phoenix, he's a great actor.
Absolutely. Robert Redford, Old Man and the Gun, which was going to be his final performance until he realized that he wasn't being taken seriously as a leading acting candidate. So he said, maybe I'll do another one.
He's fine in this. I'm taking a cue from my co-host here who likes to make this statement. He's fine. I don't disagree with him. The movie's fine. It doesn't really, get me too high or low. In either direction. I like the director, Lowry. I like the cast. I love Sissy Spacek. I'm in for this movie. I went to see it in theaters, so, it tickled my, curiosity. I'm not a huge fan of it at the end of the day, and he's another guy who's in everybody's top fives, and I was like, why? Why is he better than...
Because it was supposed to be his last picture.
Right.
I'm sure of it. I'm sure that's part of it. And then, as almost as soon as he realized he wasn't going to make the field, the Academy field, or any of the major precursors, he came out and was like, I might be reconsidering.
I'm still doing stuff. Yeah, I figured, Lakeith Stanfield was just like twice as good as his performance. And Robert Redford's blown me away before.
He's been awesome his whole
career. So I have nothing against him. I just didn't think this performance had a lot of weight to it. As much subtext as I would have liked. Anyway, Hugh Jackman in The Front Runner, Mike. I just saw this. I'll have a MMO Weekly review of it.
Apropos for that movie poster of a bus going off a cliff, because this movie fell off the map.
It's a very strange way to do a political campaign film. This performance is very good. You got some big showdown scenes in it. You got some range. He's definitely playing a lot here. Bottom line is, this movie, like the Steve Carell Beautiful Boy performance, probably went down in terms of its stock because of the film's performance.
Last one here, and we were doing snubs, people that were the leading men that might have had a chance at one time or another. David Diggs for Blindspotting. There's a large swath of critics support out there, film Twitter support out there, that really hold the candle for Blindspotting and think it's vastly overlooked.
Everybody in this film, look out for them, because they're going to make a lot of good things going forward. This was a very strong movie. I quibble with one of the scenes at the end. It's a bit of a, I can't believe this is happening kind of thing. However, I'm a huge fan of, scene to scene. Like, there's a lot of great scenes in this film. David Diggs, undeniably strong performance. I really loved him in this. I thought this was a major coup for him, really bursting onto the scene. He's been a comedian. He's been a bit part of character actor, the teacher in Wonder. He's been in a lot of things. However, this was like him carrying a movie with a really strong cast. So I don't know if he is entirely on his shoulders, but I loved him in this movie, and he's got a ton of range and one hell of a script, one hell of a movie.
So those are all the snubs, the leading men that just fell short of the Academy's Field of Five. Now we're going to talk about individual nominees that did make the cut, the five nominees for Best Lead Acting Performance. Like I said at the top, we're going to give you reasons why everyone, one by one, will win the Oscar and why they will not win the Oscar. We're going to keep this spoiler-free, so we're not going to ruin any movies for you if you haven't had a chance to see these. Mm-hmm. We're just trying to implore you to go see these, because obviously if you're going to watch the Oscars, Oscar Sunday, it'll keep you more in the know, and we'll set the table for you in that way. And we're going to start at the top here with Christian Bale from Vice, Mike.
It's going to be a race to watch this weekend after the BAFTAs. You know, Rami Malek and Christian Bale are kind of neck and neck in terms of the precursor awards mm-hmm. right now. That is turning into quite the race. This category is turning into quite the race because of that. So we'll start with this, Mike. Why will Christian Bale from Vice win this award?
Pretty simple. He may have had the best performance of the year for any leading actor.
That's high praise.
Pretty on its face. That's what this award is supposed to reward. Mm-hmm. But add to that the fact, some of the things he did in this movie, in this role as Dick Cheney, that the Academy loves rewarding. They love when thespians give their take on flawed political figures or world leaders.
They do.
We talked about previous episodes, Helen Mirren, Meryl Streep, mm-hmm. Colin Firth playing the King's Speech, Daniel Day-Lewis, Lincoln, obviously.
There's a template for this.
it's a blueprint, yeah. They love when beautiful leading men and women ugly themselves up and add or lose a bunch of weight. Charlize Theron in Monster with the prosthetics, Nicole Kidman in The Hours prosthetics, Matthew McConaughey lost a ton of weight for Dallas Buyers Club. And when top line thespian does both at once, usually they really can't help themselves, and we just saw this last year with Gary Oldman
got fat suited,
right? And so you see Christian Bale take the fat suit and just put on the weight himself,
even though the makeup did a nice job with the hairstyling and the makeup.
So you add all that, you add the fact that it's a decent performance, it's a really, really good performance, maybe the best one of the year, and then you add in what the subject matter of the film was, what the performance touched on, and the political leanings of the Academy, they're very much aligned with the leanings of this film. There's really a clear blueprint here to see Christian Bale getting his second Oscar on Oscar Sunday. True. And his first leading one.
The Big Picture podcast with Sean Fennessy, they keep talking about how this could be a crowning moment for Christian Bale as the best living lead actor, you know, the next best guy, as Daniel Day-Lewis was winning a bunch in a row for a while there. Or
so
had
Daniel
the most.
Day-Lewis is going to have to come out on stage and hit him with a steel chair. Just,
oh, yeah. The wrestling metaphors were coming. I should have known. Mike, there's a surprising amount of versatility in this performance, and it has everything in my mind to do with Amy Adams. His scenes with her bring out so much emotion from him, and really some of the only emotion of the film and in this portrayal, because he's so, you know, just quiet and powerful and behind the scenes with everybody else in a way. There's also a ton of subtext here as well.
Yeah.
On the surface, you know, Cheney is basically trying to put on a poker face throughout the film. We have the quiet power. We have the coup that's happening behind the scenes. But Bale attributes many of Cheney's actual trademark gestures as some finales to scenes, or as some of the turns in certain scenes. And I thought that was really brilliant by him. He saves those gestures, the snarl for that big trailer moment at the end of the scene with Donald Rumsfeld in the office. He turns some scenes with finally you get that, you know, that walk or that hunch. You get a Cheney gesture that we've all seen a million times from the actual man himself, and you get it through his performance in a big spot. I thought he really picked the spots there extremely well. Well, you also get some showy Oscar reel scenes, especially with Adam McKay getting surreal with this. This is a satire, and I think the Academy eats that stuff up.
Goes into all sorts, with the script alone, goes into all different genres and mm-hmm. touches on different. I mean, we got at one point Christian Bale's literally reciting Shakespeare that worked in seamlessly with the plot. It's really some fascinating stuff, and it does show his range and versatility. Now, does he show a lot as Dick Cheney? No, and maybe that works to his benefit in some weird way, because Dick Cheney was pretty one note from our point of view, just seeing him as a vice president.
The character, we're starting to transition. Now, we're going to have some stats that are confusing, because the stats both go in support of Malick and Bale. Here's a stat that goes in support of Bale. The Critics' Choice Awards, they've picked 8 out of the last 10 Oscar winners, or Oscar winners.
The lesser-known award show.
And they picked Christian Bale this year. Bottom line, this is going to be deceiving, or you can make the stats work for you in either way, but you started to hit at this transition. Michael, why will Christian Bale not win?
The Killers are great soundtrack, but they're not Queen.
No.
And maybe the Queen adoration, adulation, works in favor of people that want to tap their toes when they're filling out their ballots. History says this is going to be a legitimate coin flip between Bale and Malick. I got stats later on that suggest why it's a 2-horse race instead of a 3.
Right.
Apologies to Bradley Cooper. I'll have stats that suggest Remy should feel very confident. But objectively, at least for my money, so I guess subjectively, not objectively. Bale's performance was the only one that of the two between him and Malick now that was more grounded and gritty realism, and that's usually the performance that will rule the day when compared to the more absurdist borderline caricature when it comes down to rewarding the leading performance, whether it's actor or actress at the
Perhaps.
Oscars. Yeah, it is the award season for mayhem, right? Like,
right.
Nothing has gone according to plan in this award season. We have a lock in our supporting actress episode that plain out didn't get nominated in a couple of the big precursors. So, no, nothing means anything in this award season, it seems. So, it would certainly be proper for that narrative, the one where we always reward the more grounded and gritty realism, Shakespeare asides aside. This could be the award season where they do go the absurdist route. And we've seen Rami Malek's on a hot streak. He's the one that just won the SAG. He's probably going to win the BAFTA because he's playing a British royalty, basically. So there's a lot of reasons here why Bale may fall short, unfortunately for him.
For sure. And they may be going the feel-good route because the Queen music video,
yes,
times 10 in that movie makes you feel good even though they lie to you in
it
between those music
videos.
It
makes you feel better than reminding you what Dick Cheney did in Power in America.
Yeah, a little bit. To get back into those stats, again, they can, you know, work in favor either way. SAG, the Screen Actors Guild, they have picked 9 of the last... They have picked 9 of the last 10 Oscar winners. So by the percentages, Rami Malek now seems like he should win this, but who knows? Bottom line is, the volume of this performance, of Christian Bale's performance, turned way down, and you're going to have to, as an Academy member, really appreciate the stoic, the subtle, the one filled with nuance and subtext if you're going to pick Christian Bale here. Yes, the mimicry is there. Yes, there's some showy moments in between, especially behind the scenes with his family, but it's a tough year for that physical transformation to win because Rami Malek also did it in a much more feel-good way, like I said. He became Freddie Mercury, who we never thought could really be portrayed on screen. He was such a force of nature throughout the 1980s that we never really figured anybody. I remember hearing Bohemian Rhapsody, it was going to be adapted. It's like, who the hell are they going to get to play Freddie Mercury? Is that possible?
They're going to get Bruno first, Sacha Baron Cohen.
I mean, if Joaquin Phoenix is just like going, yeah, that's not going to sound very good. But I think they pulled it off. I wonder if people actually care that Vice isn't a great film. I wonder if they're coming along the ride with me or jumping on the bandwagon that we've kind of set that Vice isn't as good as people think.
Is it not? I mean, just to play devil's advocate on that point, because I mean, this has been a running theme with you and I, too, because I think Vice has more merit than obviously you do, and you're the screenwriter, so you're probably right. But is it a worse film than what Bohemian Rhapsody is overall?
No, it's a better film than Bohemian Rhapsody by, 6 points, I think, where we weighed in on it in terms of 86 to 80, something like that. But even Adam McKay admits not to knowing WTF happened, what really happened behind the scenes. He mentions that at the beginning of the movie. He mentions it throughout. There's not the arc for a character that we really should have gotten. And that's my biggest problem with
one
this.
Note, yeah.
It's a one-note character, essentially. There's not enough dimensions. They did their best with the family dynamic. But when you look at Richard III from Shakespeare, when you look at Vince Gilligan's Walter White, when you look at Denzel Washington's Alonzo Harris from Training Day, Mike, you see a performance that is just rounded is with as many positives as negatives.
Yeah, that's kind of the point that you made in our New Year's resolution thing too, our episode back there, how Hollywood needs more rounded characters. And even if you're going to have someone portrayed as the baddest of the bad, you run the risk of turning them into just a cartoon. The mustache twirling, the evil guy from that race with all the cartoon characters, where he and the dog always set out traps.
Is there any really doubt that Dick Cheney's character in this movie is going to do wrong by the end of it?
Right.
I don't think there is.
Absolutely not.
And bottom line is that doesn't really create a lot of good drama. And this movie's being lauded for its screenplay, for its overall composition in the Best Picture category. I disagree, respectfully. I wonder if the Academy was in favor of it because of its message, more so than its style, and certainly its structure. And I am upset that they gave it as much credit, because I think there were major snubs in those categories, especially the screenplay category, that did not get the credit they deserved. And now we have to, you know, have Adam McKay script in here. But bottom line is, both of these actors have won precursors, Mike. This is up for grabs in many ways, so let's get to that next.
You heard it here first. Also, Mike wants Marco Rubio to run the Academy.
No! Bradley Cooper, Mike, A Star Is Born. Why will Bradley Cooper win?
Kind of been the forgotten performance amongst this, and all the outrage that just came out saying how he was disappointed he didn't get a directing nomination, kind of spitting in the face of people who did get the directing nominations, a little spitting in the face of the people that nominated him for Best Actor, but there,
spitting in
is...
the face is harsh, but you're right that he's gently nudging people with all his interviews these days.
Yeah.
Was kind of snubbed, that I feel embarrassed by the snub. Do you think he's getting a bit of a last second pity vote here?
Could be part of it. He's been the guy that's been at the forefront, right? And there's been nobody more exploited through these precursor award shows than Bradley Cooper. He's been seated at the front of every award show just to watch everybody walk around him on the way to accept the awards. And the camera's always on him, and he's got to look happy and smiling and clapping.
Do you think he wishes the movie was just called Stars Born and not Us Stars Born, with the A seating him in the front?
You think that's what it was, huh?
I don't know.
You listed alphabetically.
No,
your name's Bradley as
Gaga's
well.
Gaga's gowns also probably, you know, affect that, because they're so big that they need room. And maybe if she tries to walk through all the people.
You got to stop wearing the meat dress.
Yeah.
It's starting to go rancid. He is an Academy darling. He really did put himself out there in a lot of ways with this movie. He proved he can be a Southern rocker. He proved he can direct the shit out of a movie for the first time. We already knew he could be a leading man. But he pulled out everything he had to be the emotional lead of this movie as well. And like I said, there is that fact that he's got to watch all these people go by when he himself put forth an awards-worthy performance. I mean, he's still my number one on the year. It's not Bale or Malik.
It's an incredible performance. He might win this thing because he gave the best performance, and the Academy may snap out of it and give it to him for that reason, right?
And you say it's a pity vote, but yeah, isn't there a chance they may actually feel bad at this point? There may be at some sort of emotional backlash and be like, what are we doing here? We're picking between two relatively polarizing, if not just below average, movies.
Right.
And we have something that's objectively decent.
Very good. Strong in every area.
Two great performances at the lead.
It's a strong in terms of the performance within the performance.
Right.
It's strong in terms of the dramatic scenes. He's obviously wearing many hats as the writer and the director
as well. It's
just
one hat. It's a cowboy hat.
That's true. But to me, he is playing very clear and terrifying subtext throughout this film. He is battling his demons, and those demons crack through the veneer, Mike, of his performance, because he wants them to, because he wants to show you that throughout the film. Upon rewatch, that's his job, and he does a great job at it. We can see how much turmoil is happening within his character, especially once he meets Gaga, especially once he goes on stage with her, and of course the behind the scenes stuff.
Tell me something, girl.
I also love that he decided to channel Sam Elliott for many of his mannerisms and for the accent.
Probably sunk Sam Elliott's awards chances soon as he saw that on set.
They're from the same hometown in this movie. I'm not going to give up spoilers, but I think it's definitely a deliberate choice here, and we kind of mentioned it, or at least I mentioned it in the Sam Elliott argument why he could win, is that he was the basis for Bradley Cooper's performance. Mike, as an actor also directing the film, when you watch this performance, he is forcing himself, or he's giving himself the opportunity as an actor to play off other characters in this movie. It is constant. It is continuous, which also means constant. Mm-hmm. But basically,
synonyms.
Cooper, as a director, understands acting, and he is putting himself just into great team scenarios with Gaga, with Elliot. They're having some, you know, dynamics that really, really work and that are wonderful to watch. And scene to scene, you know, this movie is incredible. But I talked about the versatility. He's all levels of drunk in this movie. He's
yes.
abusing various substances. He does play sober too, and that's a kind of a different look at his persona. He's got an entirely different character on stage when his character does step on stage, and he pulls off rock star, like you said, in an amazing way.
And it was such a big question mark going into the movie too, as to whether or not he would be believable at all. He answers that question literally within the first 3 minutes of the film.
Re-listening to the soundtrack, I wish there was a few more layers of metaphor about, you know, the fate of his character.
Oh, you only got to that conclusion like time and time again after seeing this movie and listening to it, though.
Correct.
That's not somewhere you got
early.
It's not
something that hits you at first. I will give you credit there. However, upon rewatch,
dare take bad words against black guys.
If you listen to that song again and then dare to question me about the end of this film like you did in the OSP, you're out of order.
It's a bad ending.
You're out of order, said the judge, who is me in this scenario. No, Mike, I will say, might it be possible that we give a third candidate a chance because neither of the top two candidates are running away with this?
Why not? Because, especially if it's going to be the third candidate, it might as well be somebody that the Academy loves, that's doing something for the first time. And this was his first directorial effort.
Right.
It was stunning. And he pulls off not only a great directorial effort, but it does translate into the performance as well. It's one of the best performances of the year.
If there are two favorites and they're coming back to the field, you got to wonder, the BAFTAs, this whole episode, or these two episodes here, they're kind of a way to preview you for the BAFTAs. We're going to have MMOW out on Monday, where we kind of go over this race one more time, because if Bradley Cooper wins at the BAFTAs, now he might have that late surge. So if we're rooting for him, I'm rooting for him, I'll say, to win at the BAFTAs and really throw this race into a tizzy, also because I think it might be the best performance of the year in terms of
the
actors.
If he wins at the BAFTAs, Rami Malek can't win the Oscar, can he?
Oh, it's,
I mean, doesn't that make, just on an Oscar puzzles way, doesn't that make sense? If Rami Malek can't sway the English voting body of the Academy?
It's definitely a strike against him. And then Bale had early momentum, Malek had late momentum, and then the very late momentum surge for Cooper could throw him back up with the narrative of the pity vote. Now that we're calling it that, I don't know why you let me call it that. Michael, an easier answer. Why will Bradley Cooper not win this?
Because even if he does win the BAFTA, you got to win two of the major four precursor awards, and he would have only won one, and at this point he's won zero. And he probably is not going to win the BAFTA.
It would take something unprecedented to get Bradley Cooper the win here,
wouldn't
it? We've
said this in a previous pod, but since Adrien Brody won the Best Actor Award in the film year 2002-2003, every eventual Oscar winner has won at least two of the big four precursor awards. And again, I just keep getting, because all I care about is myself, really, I keep going back to feeling vindicated about how the studio sunk this movie and the awards chances by their own doing.
Idiotic.
Sometimes the easy thing to do is also the smart thing to do. And with the HFPA, the Hollywood Foreign Press, being as unpredictable as they always seem to be, it's reprehensible, especially in hindsight, that this movie wasn't positioned as a comedy or musical, because it would have been made the road and the path so much easier. It would have made it probably more difficult for Bale. Maybe Bale still does win, but at least you have that Best Picture win. If nothing else, you have the Best Picture win. You probably have the Best Lead Actress win.
Probably.
If Gaga over Coleman, it would have been close.
But based on the Critics' Choice,
right,
when all three are in that category, they might have awarded Gaga and awarded Close. So.
And maybe there's better feelings all around about the movie that does carry Bradley Cooper to a win over Christian Bale. This could have been a whole different type of award season if only they did what they are still advertising the movie as, which is saying it's a musical.
It's very strange. If any movie was a musical on the year, it was this one for sure.
Crazy.
What you're playing out through song in this movie, these are major plot devices. These are scenes that are intricate.
Either one.
Intricate. Wow, that word is lost.
Trickle is when it rains.
Intricate? Yeah, that's a word.
Intercrickle is when the water gets inside.
Inside running of water.
Yeah.
The inside running of water of this category, I'm ashamed for the film and for the HFPA because this is so obviously a musical. Why even bother have the categories if we're going to call two musicals best dramas? They have drama in them, but they're structured as musicals, gosh darn it.
Yeah.
I hated that.
And you can't say, I mean, going back to what he said recently, this only came up a couple days ago. He had the interview with Oprah, and he said, I felt embarrassed by not getting a Best Director nomination from the Academy.
Right.
I felt like that was my duty. That's going to, I mean, it has rubbed some people the wrong way. There is the split of maybe he just does have that high of standards of himself. He is the consummate professional by all accounts, so that would make sense.
You wonder if he's second-guessing the fact that he didn't campaign hard enough,
sure,
or he didn't do this, he didn't shake enough hands. Maybe that's what he's trying to say there. I typically think Bradley Cooper's, you know, a guy that people like, and
yeah,
he seems like a good dude and really just wants to make good movies. So I don't necessarily think that's a dubious thing to say. However, you're right, it could be misinterpreted. Look, this movie has disappointed a lot of people to the point where its Surefire Awards inevitability has dwindled all the way down to the longest of long shots now, Mike.
Mm.
I'm so shocked to say that after we thought it was going to sweep, perhaps, which was the narrative going forever. I mean, it has fallen from a lofty height, and now it is in deep, deep trouble. I wonder if Bradley Cooper getting snubbed for Best Director will also work against him here. Basically, people saying that the perception from that Academy is stocked down, not only on the movie, but on Bradley Cooper himself. If they were stocked up on him, they would have voted him for director as well, you would think. So it might hurt his chances. Again, we're in a rhetorical exercise here. But look, Bale brings something special with the physical transformation,
sure,
and the mimicry. Rami Malek brings something special in terms of his lip sync prowess, and he might be the lip sync performance of the millennia. But to his credit, you know, he brought a character of such famed charisma to life on screen that we never thought could be possible, and he does it in another musical, which should have been called a musical from the HFPA. Michael Cooper does some terrific things, but does he have drama on the level of Bale's? Does he have musical or performance within the performance? Does he have performance chops on the level of Malick's? I don't know if he's as good as either in either category, so he, in fact, is being a bit outshined on both those levels, and I think ultimately that's why people are voting against him, because he doesn't have the edge on either one of these other front runners in that regard.
It's crazy to see, I guess in reality, how low or how not prestigious a film most voting bodies thought A Star Is Born was.
True.
Because we, like you said, we thought it was going to be a sweep at some point. It just, it hasn't really done anything major at the precursors.
It's not winning. It's getting nominated. So I do think there is a respect for it. It's the most nominated.
Yeah, but getting nominated and being the most nominated is good for a film like The Favourite.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, that's a win for a film like that. This movie was supposed to,
because of its expectations,
right, be lightning and thunder all up and down every awards show.
And it's because it's fallen from such a height, like we said. The last thing I want to say about Cooper's character is that it is very misunderstood by people. It is a character that is very elusive to people. It is a character that is wrought with a lot of heaviness and seriousness. And in terms of the themes of the movie, he has the burden of pulling a lot of those through to an audience that really probably doesn't want to hear. I know we as audience members, we didn't want to hear what they had to say, because there's a lot of confusion surrounding that character. There's a lot of depression surrounding that character. He's dealing with substance abuse, and it's one of the more ambitious performances, I would say, in that regard. And
fair.
I wonder if you can give him credit for that ambition, but does it land? And you don't think it lands necessarily. I tend to, you know, think it lands a little better, but I would admit that this movie has some really off notes.
Yeah, no question there. And speaking of off notes, let's move on to the next nominee at this category, Willem Dafoe for At Eternity's Gate. Mike, why is Willem going to take home gold on Oscar Sunday?
We've talked about in our Best Actress pod that Willem Dafoe, Glenn Close, these are some of the biggest names who have never won an Oscar. And if you're going to give a legacy award to someone, give it to Willem Dafoe playing Vincent van Gogh. I mean, that kind of, in terms of stature, that's a pretty big deal. You know, Annette Bening, you know, Paul Giamatti we mentioned earlier in this pod. You know, there are other names that are contending for that, you know, title that nobody really wants. They would like to win, I'm sure. So if someone deserves that last minute legacy pick, it could be Dafoe. However, I'm against last-minute legacy picks. But, look, I mean, the Academy is just now getting to this performance, so maybe this entire field comes back, or the favorites come back to the field, Michael, and the artsy, extra-fartsy theater boy and girl stuff.
Like the same reason, yeah.
Maybe could take over, and in a whim of insanity, they vote for this. But, look... The other thing I would say is perhaps we get a great week of weather in California and in where the Academy is for the most part, and they all go on hikes and they all commune. Jesus. They commune with nature and they all have that Vincent van Gogh, Willem Dafoe montage where they're running around frolicking, throwing dirt on their face and laughing with insane joy. Perhaps they have their moment.
Everyone in this theater only have one ear?
No.
Yeah, we talked about the split as far as At Eternity's Gate goes between critics and layperson moviegoers and how this film and performance has been received by both. It's something that people who clearly don't listen to what we say and only read what we fit into 280 characters feel compelled to remind us of, but that's fine. Maybe, like I said, we have kind of a similar reason. Maybe the Academy sees all these performances as relatively even because they're in the ultimate fart-sniffing mood, like you say. And they're just going to do the high society. Oh, this is for critics, and you couldn't possibly understand what it means to be an actor and a thespian of these accounts.
High horses.
Yeah, exactly. So maybe they do default to using the Glenn Close tie-breaking method of the long-time Lifetime Achievement Award. Well, all these performances are on equal footing anyway, so let's reward the guy that's been here longest. Oh, they aren't. They shouldn't. I don't think that will happen, thank God.
Good transition, because Mike, keep going, baby. Why Willem Dafoe will not win.
Because when you look up Happy to Be Here in a Webster's Dictionary, it's that stupid close-up of him with his ear chopped off in this movie.
No, kudos for him getting nominated 2 years in a row. I mean, that's something.
Oh, no, that's huge. That's awesome. Good and work he's out not, there. It's not like he's not a worthy talent, but not for this performance and not for this movie. I understand the people that are out there that want to claim that this movie is so beautiful. It is. It's very aesthetically pleasing. Yep. Absolutely it is. But don't let that blind you from the fact that the drama of this is lacking when compared to other movies in this category.
We've talked about bad movies getting nominations in various categories throughout Oscar history. To me, this is one of the worst movies that got a major nomination. Last year's Roman J. Israel, Esquire was one as well. Now we have At Eternity's Gate, which was just did not work for me at all.
Me either.
And we gave it a hard time, and I think we gave our reasons for it. So this is not a great movie.
And if the Academy is really concerned about getting casual viewers back or bringing them in to the point, and they've proven they are because they've walked back literally every major decision they've made, including allowing all five original song nominated performances to take place. They acquiesced in letting last year's major category acting winners actually present, which they weren't going to do for whatever reason, but that's been the routine lately. Rewarding the film that casual viewers not only haven't seen, but the ones that have clearly have such an issue with it, as the critical scores will tell you, or the critical website scores will tell you, it's the complete opposite thing of what you want to accomplish.
Think about the middle school mics that we used to be when we pretty much watched popular movies, Disney movies, you know, all this stuff that we liked as kids. And then we watched our first Oscars show. I don't know. This was the case for me. I don't know if it was the case for you. You watch the awards show. You see who wins.
Who's marrying Colt Yard?
Then you go to the Blockbuster and you get those movies because you want to, you know, become more cultured. You want to watch a better movie.
Yep.
If I had gone to see At Eternity's Gate, I might be talking about MCU movies and MCU movies only today.
Chopped your own ear off.
Yeah, no, there's no way I would have respected this performance at that point and been able to live with myself, because I do think this movie has some unforgivable flaws to it. I'm very down on it overall. And we are a film appreciation podcast. Mike, I wanted to cut my own goddamn ear off during this movie because it's so freaking boring. And then when they actually have to move the plot forward, they do it with on-the-nose dialogue, in dialogue that should be in a Lifetime movie or a Hallmark movie or something that you show to kids in, like, on the Nickelodeon network.
Yeah, they also, like, poo-poo counter-arguments or explain away easy plot holes. It's just...
What is wrong with them?
There's no way John David Washington isn't worthy of this spot. Ethan Hawke isn't worthy of this spot. Ryan Gosling is... I mean, this is, you know, good for Willem Dafoe. Great talent. Glad he's here, but this cannot win.
It's a strong performance in an overall sense. Like, it's a top 20 probably on the year for me. I don't think it's in a top 10, and that's why I'm very aggravated at the end of the day, because a lot of those snubs deserve to be here instead of this performance.
All right, let's move on. We said at the top, this is kind of a two-horse race, and the two horses are Christian Bale and Rami Malek. So Rami Malek for Bohemian Rhapsody. Let's talk about why he'll win, and the biggest reason for me is that he won in what would be considered an upset, the SAG Award.
Huge moment.
Beating out Christian Bale in that award in the previous 24 times that the SAG Award for Lead Actor has been given out. They've only been wrong at picking the eventual Oscars winners 5 times total in its history, and only 1 time since 2003.
Which was Denzel in Fences, I believe.
Right.
I wrote that down, so I believe
it. A couple years ago. he's got the pedigree that Bradley Cooper would kill for as far as being a SAG winner, Golden Globe winner, probably a BAFTA winner. We'll see what the
Across
weekend holds.
Across the pond has got to vote for him, no?
I would think so, but we could pitch this all we want as a 3-man race, but the reality is that Malik probably is heavily ahead of Bale, and Vegas agrees. He's a minus 200 favorite right now.
Wow, the Vegas factor.
Yeah, and that SAG win is likely the most illuminating reason why. I'm going to surprise some people with another reason why, though. And that reason is that the backlash against this movie will swing back, and I think that helps Malik. I know on first blush that obviously sounds like a reason he would lose, but much like how I postulated there are issues with Green Book, but people don't want to hold it against Mahershala Ali's performance, I think the same about Rami Malek and people not wanting to hold his performance against this movie's reception.
Now, Michael, I agree with you on the point you're about to make because I read this earlier. However, in a very cynical way, I want to, you know, criticize your rhetoric here, because you have made a major point in the past to be against backlashes and their effectiveness, but now you are saying, and I agree that there will be a backlash to the backlash, so instead of one backlash, you believe two backlashes can be effective.
I just want a backlash to stick.
Right.
I want something to actually affect an award's chances that should. It'd be on track to be one of, if not the lowest critically rated best picture winner ever.
Mm-hmm.
And just for the shit flavored icing, has some of the most disgusting behind the scenes allegations attached to its original director, right?
True.
So if the Academy is ready to take their anger out on the movie's best picture placement, there's definitely some logic in them not wanting to injure Remy along the way, and maybe even more so hold him up to the highest standard possible for being a true professional through all of it.
Another thing in Rami's favor, he was at the center of the conflict with the director on opposite sides. And
right.
That was something we covered throughout the OSP. We covered it throughout our Hollywood Hot Take episodes leading up to this movie. Back from when we started as a podcast, Singer was reported to be going crazy throughout that production, not showing up, and getting into major arguments with the star throughout that process. He leaves, really gets fired, and then Rami Malek basically comes out and says, I never got along with him. So if Rami Malek was kind of Singer's choice, Singer's right-hand man throughout that, then yeah, maybe Rami Malek would not be in the position.
Yeah, and
he
if
is
God
now.
Forbid Malek was on the press tour right now defending Singer's involvement in this.
Oh,
you
he
know?
Would have been taken down
right.
by association,
so I
which
think
is understandable.
Right. I think he's played this very well, and maybe all that taken in concert, you know, the whole idea of don't take the sins of the father out on the children type deal.
Right.
Don't take your anger about Bryan Singer or about this movie's best picture nomination out on the lead, who did a certifiable job as a Freddie Mercury cosplayer. I think there is a rationale there that works in Rami Malek's favor.
I think people are being mature about this in a way. You know, they're maturely making a distinction, a clear distinction, that this great performance about this man who is beloved doesn't necessarily need to be vilified because we had a scumbag
right.
involved with this production for 60% of the time. That makes good sense, even though I do think this production was infected by some lies of its own.
Of course.
We're going to get to that. Bottom line, though, I think this is one of the very best musical biopic performances we've seen in a long, long while. And it is just justifiably nominated, Michael, because the decisions made are very smart. The decision to take the Queen cover band sing-alike champion of the known world, who actually sings a lot like Freddie Mercury, if it could be possible, it was proven possible by one man, and that man is Mark Martel.
What he did great a name.
Phenomenal job, and you know,
Parents did a phenomenal job at naming.
Joaquin Phoenix sang the Johnny Cash part, which is probably the least convincing thing about that performance. This movie just in a lip sync phenomenal. In terms of what Rami Malek's able to pull off. They're able to sync up, which is another reason why best editing and best sound categories make sense for this movie. They're able to sync up Rami's lips with these songs, and they do it with Freddie's voice for some of the performances. They do it with Mark Martel's voice for some of the live performances. I thought they did a terrific job with that. Rami Malek plays the shit out of it. I also think Rami elevates some of the bad dialogue in this movie because of his performance and because of the choices he's making in some of those bad scenes. Like, he uses some of those bad scenes to kind of show off in a way, and I really like that. Look, I mean, he's also probably the most rounded character, if not the only rounded character of this story, Mike, because God knows we're not getting flaws from Brian May and the band members.
May came out looking great,
which was very aggravated, right? And it's kind of sad.
Probably expected if you know anything about the...
But it does allow the showcase for Rami Malek to play the only complex character in this movie, even if they're taking artistic license to a fictitious level that's aggravating for a lot of folks.
Well, you're hitting on some reason.
I said aggravating throughout that a lot.
You're hitting on a reason there why he may not win. But one of the reasons I was going to say that he won't win is ageism. Because I thought it was past time for Bale to be crowned king of all actors, and Rami will have plenty of time to be back. But then I looked up, Rami Malek's 37?
How?
He and Pharrell.
No!
Like, he and Pharrell need to open up their own line of skincare. I don't care if they fill the jars with, like, used horse semen.
No.
I will buy it in bulk. Those guys don't age at all. I thought Rami Malek was, like, 25.
Me too. Mr. Robot, I figured he's sub 30.
Right!
Definitely sub 30.
My lord! I don't get it. Pharrell, we talked about with Brendan Lee Mulligan. The guy they don't age.
They don't
astounding.
Age. They screw with people on who wants to be a millionaire questions. Michael, I have a few more theories. I wonder if that artistic license and all the white lies.
That's the biggest reason.
Of this screenplay just being broadcasted and clarified throughout award season. All the journalists are doing their job. All the film pundits are doing their job. They are basically showing you the liberties and the falsehoods of this script on a daily basis throughout all their articles on not only film Twitter, but in the trades, for Christ's sake. The movie also has some unforgivably bad dialogue. It might be one of the worst movies to be nominated for this many Academy Awards ever.
You don't even have to talk about the subjective aspect of that, just critical scores. It's not good.
It's not good for a reason, because some of these scenes are unforgivably bad.
Yeah, they're not great.
That being said, some of the scenes are very good in the opposite direction with the performances. I gave it credit for that. It's such a bipolar movie. It's highs and lows. The lows are so low. The highs are pretty gosh darn high because the music is so good. But look, I think, you know, we can't underestimate the Bryan Singer controversy at the end of the day. It might sour the Academy on voting for this movie, period.
It would be nice to see some sort of behind-the-scenes backlash that's worthy of actually affecting, you know, the people that do these awful things.
Yeah, the article came out.
Seem like they matter.
The article came out after the last award show, the SAG award show.
Mm-hmm.
So Rami was crowned the new favorite, right? And then that article comes out. It's pretty close. I mean, don't quote me on that.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure. But bottom line is, the SAG voting wasn't going on when that article was out. Now that the article is out, do people just avoid this movie with a 10-foot pole, and Rami Malek is a casualty of that?
Right. We'll see. I tend to believe, just personally, based on him having such a opposing view of Singer, like you hit on in the why he'll win section, they might get points for that. That's how I would fall on it. But
it's a fascinating race.
Really,
and another reason for that, Mike, is Viggo Mortensen from Green Book. He might still win this thing.
Why? See, like, this is it's so tough for me because I've developed such a sour taste in my mouth over this film and this performance. I know on screen it's not Viggo's fault per se. Not that the same could be said for his actions off screen, but it's a great performance. It really is. In a vacuum, this performance could probably stand toe-to-toe, at least with Malick's of this group. Certainly, right. I think it's better than Defoe's. We've been on record about that. And that's the one the SAG agreed to represent them as a whole this year in the class. So if you could say this is at least as good as the SAG winner, Rami Malek's performance, then maybe there is a chance here. Viggo also went ugly in the way that Christian Bale did for this role, and the Academy decides not to hold the Farrelly Golden Globe speech against him, but instead buys into it as a call to action, like he wanted it to be, even though it may not have come off that way to us. Then sure, there's a reason enough here to consider Viggo not out of the running yet.
This performance involves another physical transformation. So if, you know, we can make the same argument for Bale, mm-hmm. for Viggo, sure. in this category. He's also been knocking on the door, the Oscar winner door, for a while. You know, he was nominated for Captain Fantastic. So he's somebody else that's been surging in the minds of the Academy. That does matter at the end of the day. You know, your first great role may not win you the award. Your fifth great role probably wins you the award in terms of these Oscar voting for most people. But the role and the character, it's also part of a feel-good story. And I do think, in terms of the behind-the-scenes stuff, you know, Viggo's been forgiven by a lot of people. I've been reading that. I've been hearing that, you know, for what he said. I mean, it was a definite miscalculation that turned out should and does offend a lot of people, mm-hmm. still. And for the word that he used flippantly in the conversation that he probably just shouldn't have any business touching. I would argue that people are coming along to the realization that, you know, Mahershala's character of Don Shirley, he affects Viggo's character as much as the opposite. So it's not necessarily the white savior narrative that's working. There still is that quote-unquote magical Negro that's from Spike Lee. That term still applies to this movie that people are upset about. I wonder if they're slowly coming along to the side that we kind of pointed out when we reviewed the films. That I do think both characters are affecting each other. So I don't necessarily think you have a white savior. I just think it is from a white POV. This movie is undeniably written from a white POV. And that's, you know, is that necessarily a bad thing? I don't think so. When the message is something that is plaudible, I would say. Right. I wish, you know, Peter Farrelly didn't go on stage and say it will save the world,
right.
You know, but it's quite the redemption story for Viggo Mortensen's character, and he does a nice job portraying the results of this. My biggest issues with the script in this movie are that they don't portray the process necessarily well.
Yeah, I mean, that could be a reason that he doesn't win and why it's held against him. That
the
script doesn't, he's treated with kid, he's a terrible racist character that's treated with kid gloves and doesn't really have that come to Jesus moment as to why his transformation happens.
I've come along to your point, which I disagreed with you on the OSP. In Act One, he is very racist early on, and it now bothers me upon rewatch. I've rewatched this thing a couple times in the theaters, out of theaters, with a screener. Bottom line is, it's repugnant what he does in Act One, and then all of a sudden, he's kind of cool with
no explanation,
with
no consequence, Mahershala. By the way.
Right, no consequence. The wife just kind of like, oh, geez,
right.
He thinks this. And then he's kind of racist in front of Mahershala. And then they just coexist for a while. And all right, slowly you can see maybe by illusion that his heart is changing. And the results of it is that he does change heart throughout the film, and that's a good thing. That's a good message.
Sure, but the explanation all along has been, oh, come on, he's not a bad guy.
They don't,
that doesn't work.
They don't want to get into the weeds of why and how.
And that was one of our biggest criticisms
changed,
at
right.
the OSP, that this movie could have been so much more.
It doesn't go deep.
The fact that Peter Farrelly thinks it was is kind of a big issue.
Right.
And that's why his speech didn't work.
A fun buddy comedy with a good message that doesn't execute, you know, the true drama of it should not be up for best fucking picture.
Right.
Should not be up for 8-6 Oscars. You should have a better composition up for those movies. I don't think this is a best screenplay. I don't think this is a best picture. I don't think this should be in terms of those categories. Now, best actor, look, I'm Italian. myself. And I'm a Connecticut Italian. I realize that. But this is so stereotypically Italian at times. It's like he's doing an impersonation of an impersonation of an Italian. He's watched a lot of Sopranos, yeah. and he's doing the Goombad thing. That's right. what my family would call Goombad. We're Sicilian Italian. And look, I get aggravated by some of the gestures and the accents at times. If he said, forget about it, I would have punched something. I would have punched the wall. Because that's almost the level that he's
right.
getting to.
Right.
You know, and the Donnie Brasco thing, that movie bothers me a little bit as well for the same reasons. At other times, I'm really enjoying this performance, but there's some off notes, and the off notes have to do with the performance itself.
Yeah, that's on-screen stuff, and if there is ever going to be a backlash that takes hold, there is a ton of baggage that he has created himself, self-induced wounds outside of the picture.
Right.
Maybe people do hold the Farrelly stuff against him. Maybe people do hold the picture against him,
right.
against everyone involved with the picture that's not Mahershala Ali.
Finally, I think Cooper was outshined by Malick in terms of a performance movie, a musical movie. I do think Bale outshines Viggo in terms of a physical transformation, in terms of kind of doing the same thing but better.
Yeah, I wouldn't argue with that. I think there's, you know, the argument there is, what did Viggo do better than anyone else in this category? Yeah,
and specifically, like, what did he do better than Bale? Right. I don't think he did anything better than Bale. That really shows me,
right,
like, he, you know, that was his type of performance, and he doesn't win the type in the category, never mind the category.
Let's go into Perfecting Perfection to wrap this up with. If you've not joined us, if you've not heard one of our previous retrospectives on Perfecting Perfection, what we do is we take the nominees in a given category and re-rank them in order of personal preference. These are not necessarily who we think will win the award. That'll come at a later date in our prediction show. This is not necessarily who we think should win the award. That'll come at the Mike and Oscars award show that's coming up in a couple weeks. We will instead just be ranking them in terms of 5 through 1, what we liked best. And
we humbly call this Perfecting Perfection.
Yes. We again are very similar in the way we do these. Our top three are identical, and our 5 and 4 are just flip-flopped.
Our 5 and 4 are different. I have Willem Dafoe. You have Viggo.
Yeah, I can't. I got so much disdain. Yeah, it's such a toxic property to me right now, and I know that's probably unfair, and I'm probably harsher on it than necessary. But
for as much trouble as we've given at Eternity's Gate, you know, Dafoe's doing a lot of things,
right?
And he does have some great scenes. We gave him credit for some of those great scenes. I was definitely making a point in our rhetorical exercise here during the category review to get at him a bit, because those snubs made me angrier.
Right.
However, I would say, to, you know, there's some good stuff there, so I can't begrudge you that rating too much. But our number three is surprisingly Rami Malek.
Yeah, and I think that's just a credit to how we feel Bale did, or I'm sorry, Cooper did, right? Because this is Malek and Bale, according to everyone in the Academy, at least it would seem. But
we disagree.
We do disagree, and we have Cooper at number one.
We have Cooper at number one. We have Bale number two. We have Malek at number three. I think there, you know, the Academy is recognizing some special factors for Malek and Bale. At the same time, the most well-rounded performance and the most high degree of difficulty performance in terms of the drama on the page.
Had the most to prove.
Yeah, on the page. What's the toughest thing to play? What's the toughest character to play, in my mind? And what's the arc bottom line, the best script of the three is definitely A Star Is Born,
yeah,
in my opinion.
A guy from, you know, dickhead brother from Wedding Crashers, can you be a Southern rock star with, right, you know, down on his luck?
With demons,
right,
real demons to wrestle with and portray that message, which is not a popular one, which is not something that people really want to deal with.
Yeah.
And he got that into the zeitgeist in a big way. You know, it's been there before, of course. But, you know, he's taken a major movie, a $500 million movie, and putting that front and center and say, all right, America, let's deal with this now. You know, that's courageous. And everybody involved in the production, I think it's courageous. There's off notes, like I said. There's problems with the movie, like we've said. But I do think the performance was something we've never really had problems with.
Unquestionable. It's unquestionable to me. The most shocking part of Bradley Cooper's year is that he has not gotten any recognition for the acting performance as far as the major shows go.
The scene in the rain from Malick, the Bale scene in the bed with Amy Adams, those are good scenes.
Yeah.
Nothing is as good as some of the scenes between
Gaga and Cooper. It's not close to me, man. It's really not close. I have him number one with a bullet.
I agree.
So we want to know your thoughts, obviously, and how you would rank these five. Let us know if we got something right or wrong, or we way off on Willem Dafoe and Rami Malek. Do you think it's between Christian Bale, and maybe do you think Bradley Cooper has a chance? Tell us all those thoughts and more. You can get at us, Mike and Oscar on Facebook, Mike and Oscar on Instagram, MM and Oscar on Twitter, Mike and Oscar at gmail.com, MikeMikeAndOscar.com, and on Reddit. We are available everywhere you do hear podcasts. TuneIn, Stitcher, SoundCloud, iTunes, Spotify, etc., etc. Type in Mike and Oscar. You'll see me and Mike, or Mike and I is the proper English way, in our tuxedos and our red carpet bests in front of the paparazzi waving back at you. If you can leave us a iTunes, what do you call those things? Reviews? Yeah.
Reviews?
That'd be good.
Ratings? Yeah.
That'd be, we'd really help.
Really will help.
Really us. Would help us out. My God, I can't speak. I think it's time to hit stop. Mike, give us words of wisdom to go out on.
Wisdom here is at us. You know, I mean,
yeah,
we, you know, that's a saying, don't at me, but at me and at Mike, because we're on social media a lot. We're on Twitter the most, and we have so much fun talking to you there. So we got this 2 weeks of just peak excitement, you know, peak intrigue.
Sprint is coming to an end.
Talk to us. We have fun chatting with everybody for the most part. You know, we try to be professional and be nice throughout it. So, you know, don't be mean or nothing. But, yeah, at us. We'll have fun.
Don't push your luck. Yeah, guys, reality sucks. Keep watching movies with us. Like Mike said, get at us. We'll talk to you. And stay tuned for the next episode.
See ya.
I can feel your recriminations. And your judgment. And I am fine with it. You want to be loved, you'll be a movie star.